But yeah, so yeah, pitched this idea to three breweries, hoping one of them would take me under their wing and go, yeah, we'll help you brew it and we can pay us what you sell or something like that. But nobody was interested. And yeah, I just couldn't let it go. I was like a dog with a bone. I just couldn't put it down and couldn't stop thinking about it. And it kept me awake at night. And, you know, from like trying to prove a point, like I know there's something in this. But also, like I said earlier, like scratching my own itch, like I wanted to go out and drink non-alcoholic beer, but I couldn't find one that tasted good.
Where do great ideas come from? How can I hack my brain to get into creative flow? How do I flick the switch and get ideas on demand? How do I build a workplace culture that oozes creativity? I'm your host, Nicole Velick, head ideas girl at innovation and creativity company, The Ideas Bodega. We're going to dive into all facets of creativity. Welcome to Creativity Unpacked. Hello, hello, and welcome to the podcast. If you're listening for the first time, this is a podcast all about creativity and, as the title suggests, unpacking creativity and really taking a good look behind the curtain of some incredible ideas from brilliant creatives. And this episode is no exception. I got chatting to the wonderful Peter Brennan. Pete is the co-founder of the non-alcoholic Aussie beer sensation Heaps Normal. Interestingly, this week I was in Melbourne and I was having a drink at a pretty swanky cocktail bar, and the guy that was sitting next to me at the bar was drinking a non-alcoholic, obviously, Heaps Normal beer. And I have to say, I just don't think that would have happened a few years ago. So this incredible non-alcoholic beer is changing drinking culture, challenging what's normal, and really offering a beautiful solution to what is a huge problem for a lot of people. In this episode, we dive into why some ideas fly and others don't. You see, Pete's launched a few businesses before this one, but he's never had the success that Heaps Normal is having. So what's the difference, you might be asking, and why did this one take off? It's definitely a few things, like timing, having the right people and the right skills, but I'd say it's purpose. In this episode, you're going to hear Pete's story, and he has a very personal motive driving him. He is deeply connected to the brand's purpose, and I'd say that that's what makes all the difference. I hope that you enjoy this episode and take some inspiration from Pete. All right, here we go.
Hey, Pete, how are you going?
Really well, Nick. How are you?
I'm really, really good. I'm really excited to be here with you in the room today. Thanks for being on my podcast.
I think I'm more excited. It's really cool. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. Well, let's just jump right in. The first question I want to ask you is, if you could express yourself creatively where no one was watching and you had the freedom to be really crap at it and it wasn't to make money, what would you do?
Oof, good question. I was going to say change nothing because I feel like I'm living the dream, but maybe just dressing up in a really weird way and just wearing clothes where nobody could have an opinion or it wouldn't bother me at all and just be this like crazy dress up person.
That's like, I didn't think you would say that. I really love that. And I like this idea of dressing up. Like, can you just bring it to life for me? Like, what's something you could wear?
I don't know. Maybe some like leopard print stockings and stuff and like a big fluffy furry coat. Yeah, that'd be good. Just walk around like no worry in the world, you know?
That's awesome. You know, if you lived in New York, that would be totally fine. Yeah, that would be totally normal. I used to live there and it's just crazy how the things that you see just don't faze you. Like someone could literally walk past you naked and you'd be like, yeah. But anyway, okay, I love that answer. Next time I see you, I'm going to see if you're wearing maybe just a touch of leopard print or something.
Maybe like leopard print under my jeans, you know, like just a little secret that no one really knows about.
Yeah. Could be good. Oh, I think there's an idea in that.
Let's do it.
Another fun question for you is, if you could have a completely different career, like nothing kind of to do with what you're doing now, what would you do?
Do you know, I always wanted to be an architect through school, like did art and technical drawing and all that kind of stuff and always fancied myself as being an architect just to build like dream homes and things like that, and then took a slightly different career direction. But yeah, I always wonder if I was to go that route, how we'd end up.
Yeah. Have you built a house or
never.
Do you
it's
want
like
to
a dream? Yeah, for sure. It's a dream is to build our forever home, you know. But yeah, we'd just love to explore that.
What kind of architecture are you into?
Like minimalist, like a little bit of kind of, you know, raw concrete with some big fluffy rugs and things like that, you know. And some leopard prints.
I can see it,
right?
Yeah, walk-in wardrobe for all your crazy outfits.
Yeah, all my leopard print leotards, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, great. Cool. Can I come to the housewarming?
Absolutely.
All right, so a little bit of a more serious question. What do you do now?
I consider myself a brand builder. I run a branding studio called Electric and Analog. We create brands, we reinvent brands, typically for companies in tech, fashion, food and drink. I'm also the co-founder of a non-alcoholic beer company called Heaps Normal, which I'm hugely proud of and has become a bit of a rocket ship that we're all strapped into and doing really cool stuff. But yeah, my specialties are kind of building brands and growing brands. So
amazing. And we're going to dig into both of those projects. One of the things that's really interesting to me is the relationship that people have with their own creativity. And when you dig and you look back, it often gets very much established in childhood. So, Pete, I'd love to ask you, were you a creative kid?
Yeah, I think I was. You know, I battled a lot with attention at school. So, like, maths and things like that weren't my strong point. I had to go to a thing called Master Maths, which is like an after-school extra maths lessons for people that weren't very good at maths. But, yeah, the creativity side, was definitely kind of supported as a kid by my, you know, by my mom more than anyone probably, and my grandparents, and yeah, just really excelled at art at school. And yeah, those things were really important to me, like way more important than maths and science and that kind of stuff. And I feel like it's kind of stayed with me. I joke that I get nosebleeds from spreadsheets and stuff when we have our finance meetings and things like that, but I'm just not very good with numbers, just way better with colors and things like that, you know.
God, I relate to that so much, more than you know. So what kid were you in the playground?
That's an interesting question, because I was born in England. I moved to South Africa when I was 10 years old. And, you know, I think at the age of 10, you're pretty influential and you're kind of looking for your friends group. And I guess I was like moved from one country to the other and was this strange kid with a weird accent and, you know, like pale little English freckled kid in this school full of like bronze African rugby playing kids. And I just stood out like a sore thumb.
So the reason I ask that question about like what kid were you in the playground is I often find that people were doing a version of themselves in the playground. So, you know, my friend who's an entrepreneur, she was the kid selling rocks. Like, do you know what I mean?
Love
like
that. Yep.
Trying to get people to give her money to buy a rock. And then like for me personally, I was the kid always coming up with ideas for plays, making up dances, making everybody then learn the dances and then doing them in front of the class. So does that relate? Can you kind of like see elements of adult you in the playground?
Yes and no. We're going to go deep. Are you ready to go deep?
I love going deep.
Okay, we're going deep. So yeah, I had a strange childhood than most people growing up. Obviously moving country was a huge thing. My dad was a very successful businessman when we were young. He was a multimillionaire. We had sports cars and houses in Spain and all this kind of, you know, speedboats and everything. And he became a very abusive alcoholic. He committed suicide when I was 11 years old. So I kind of, you know, grew up in the shadow of that. And the weird thing was when he passed away, he was declared bankrupt. So nobody in the family could really understand how it all happened, you know, from all this wealth to literally having nothing. So my childhood was an interesting one because I kind of went from this like riches to rags story of like huge house with a swimming pool and all these amazing things to like living with my mom, my brother on like the 14th floor of a block of flats and had to go
wow.
work in a surf shop to help like pay rent and work in a restaurant as a waiter and things like that.
What age were you?
I was 11 when my dad passed away.
Okay.
And then, from kind of that moment on, it was a little bit of the school of hard knocks. You know, we were kind of had to help mom pay board, which she called it, which is like helping her pay rent and stuff. So my little brother and I kind of you know, we had jobs as kids, you know, we were like working in restaurants in the evenings, we're surfing all day, and the weekends we'd work in a surf shop, and, you know, that was run by like our coach. And it was, so it was this kind of awesome upbringing of like, you know, I don't want to say hustle because that word's kind of overused, but like just trying to get out there and, you know, all other kids are going to cool and going on cool holidays and we're like going to go do our job and get some money. And, you know, which, you know, at the time was weird and, but then just became normal. And looking back, I think it's probably one of the best things that ever happened to us, really, you know, just being taught independence from a very young age, which probably explains why I've battled with authority growing up and things like that. And always wanted to do things my way a little bit, but
yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. So, you know, up, I guess before 11 being, you know, sounds like pretty normal kid and things were probably really great. Like you said, the swimming pools and yeah. the fast cars and, you know, that's
spoiled
kind of.
Yeah. Little shits, yeah.
Yeah. Probably. And then Struggle Street.
Yeah.
And I get, yeah, that's so interesting. So obviously then doing what you're doing now and entrepreneurship and running businesses and.
Yeah, it's purpose, you know, it helps you find that why and that reason to get out of bed in the morning, you know. And I have a different purpose for Heaps Normal and I have another different purpose for Electric and Analog, you know, yeah. They're both different things.
I'm really amazed by this childhood that you had and it's so interesting that, you know, what you're doing now, you can see some really direct links. So let's talk about the present moment. Can you give me a bit of a snapshot of like the journey you've taken career-wise to get to where you are now?
Yeah, for sure. So I studied art at school and straight out of school went and studied graphic design at Designs College, and that was in the days of Macromedia Freehand and Quark Express, and some younger creators probably going, what? But those are like the designer's tools of choice back then. And then got my first job in a big advertising agency in Durban called International Concept Organization, working with some incredible people. And it was just, for the first time, I felt like I'd found my spiritual home, you know, like in this really cool building with really cool people that I just looked up to and admired, and doing really cool work for a lot of fashion retailers and, you know, some really big brands in South Africa. And I was, you know, started right at the bottom. I was the, you know, the guy that cut out all the papers and put together storyboards and things like that, and then wasn't allowed into the meetings, and then was slowly allowed into the meetings, and then was allowed to design stuff for my own, and then kind of worked my way up through there. Lost my grandmother to cancer, my mom within like 3 months of each other shortly after that. So I moved to London to be near my granddad. I came back for a little while to work for Quiksilver for about 3 years in marketing. As kind of an art director there.
That would have been a bit of a dream job for a surfer.
Yeah, it was. It really was. You know, we did a bunch of campaigns. We had like Kelly Slater and Tony Hawk and Jack Johnson joining us and doing this hometown hero bus tour that we did and all sorts of things. It was really cool. And, you know, as a grom growing up surfing, competing and just loving it, like being fascinated and just completely obsessed with the sport. It was like the dream job, you know.
That sounds like it would have been pretty, like all the kind of passions coming into one,
totally,
right? Like
yeah,
the surfing, sure. The surfing and sports celebrities, the 100%. Design. Like how old were you doing that?
Early 20s, like 22, 23.
Amazing,
it was great. Yeah.
Amazing. What came after that?
So yeah, I moved back to the UK and to be near my granddad because I lost my mom and my nan and just wanted to be near him and lived in London. Weirdly stumbled into recruitment of all things. It was strange. It was so strange. So my best friend and I had moved over to London and we'd paid a deposit on this amazing apartment in Wimbledon and we were so excited. And then I was with a recruitment company as a designer for them to get me work, obviously. The estate agent phoned us and said, oh, like you guys are moving in next week. Can you come and fill out these forms? So we're like, yep. So we went in and filled out these forms. And for the job details, we put NA because neither of us had got a job. And she was like, what do you mean? And then we're like, we didn't have a job yet. And she was like, no landlord in London.
Yeah.
Give you an apartment without a job. Yeah. We're like, what? So we literally like left, grabbed the newspaper, looked at the classifieds in the back, legit. Like, and we're like, fuck, what are we going to do? And my best friend Bobby ended up working a construction site. This is the ex-head of marketing of Volcom, right? Like he's not a builder at all. And I found a job ad for a recruitment company that said no experience needed. It was like £16,000 a year salary. It was like not even enough to eat, let alone live. But it was like, no training necessary. And you make a bunch of commissions. Like, sweet, I'll just give this a crack just to get the job, you know? And it was with this really corporate recruitment company. I remember rocking up for the interview in like jeans and like a flannel shirt. And I opened the door and everybody was wearing suits and ties. And it was, everyone was on the phone and it was in my mind, but it was like, it was almost as if everyone stopped talking and went silent. Everyone stared. And the kind of, the main guy came up, his name was Will. And he said, you have the job interview? I said, yes. He says, do me a favor. He says, go buy yourself a nice suit downstairs from one of the shops and come back tomorrow. I was like, okay, great. So I did that and then just weirdly got this job doing recruitment for like KPMG and Accenture and all these horrible, and I hated it so much. I used to wear a suit to work. I hated my life.
How long did you do that for?
Like 3 months. And then, I phoned my, no, but this is a weird thing. So I phoned my recruiter from a company called Major Players, which is like specialist to the creative industry. I was like, man, you need to get me a job. Like, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to jump off a bridge. This is just ridiculous. And he's like, well, there's nothing at the moment. Like, you need some UK experience. And I was like, well, I don't have it. He says, well, just come work for us for like a few months just to, you know, tick things over. And obviously the job allowed us to get the apartment, which we wanted. It was like a dream apartment. Yeah. And then I got into this creative recruitment agency, which was dealing with like all the big ad agencies. Like, and I was like, man, I love this. Like, and it was a really weird thing for me because it was going from being a designer and, you know, as you do it as a designer in an agency, you work till stupid o'clock in the morning, getting stuff ready for pitches and meetings and all that stuff, to all of a sudden being given like, here's a desk, here's a warm list of candidates, here's a warm list of clients. You've got like, you know, my target, I think, was £10,000 a month to make in recruitment fees. And, you know, if you do that, then, you know, you can make unlimited money. And I was like, what? Like, this doesn't really make sense. Like, I've never been exposed to like uncapped earning potentials, you know, as a young man. So it was really interesting. It was basically taught me how to run a business. It taught me how to build relationships with people. It taught me how to build trust with people. And at the end of the day, you know, like as a recruitment consultant, you're selling people, really. There's emotions involved. Like there's a lot to consider. So, you know, looking back, it was something that I never thought I would get into. I wouldn't do it again, but for 6 years, I did it. And, you know, there's people that still work in those agencies, like literally 15 years later that I placed in an agency 15 years ago as an account executive that's now like general manager, you know, like just growing their careers through the businesses. So that was a really pivotal moment in my career, I think. And it's added a lot of value in not just being a creative, also knowing the business kind of science side of things.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely. You know? That's what I was thinking as you were saying that. To go from being a designer to then running an agency or studio, running this beer startup that's taken off, those business skills, I mean, that's imperative.
Yeah.
So it reminds me of, you know, Steve Jobs always used to talk about how he did some really random courses. I think one of them was like calligraphy. And it's like this thing where there's something really beautiful about just following your life and not necessarily having it all figured out, but just trusting that the right pieces are going to be there. And then one day it makes sense.
100%.
You know, rather than I feel like people try to, you know, go for that big thing right away and try to have it all figured out. Fully. And it just doesn't really work like that.
It doesn't.
There's something so beautiful about
this massively
crazy journey of just getting a job because you need an apartment.
For sure. And I think, you know, it's one of those things, like, I feel like I've had so many things happen when I'm like, fuck, why is this happening? This is like the worst thing ever. And then you kind of go, I guess just through experiences, go like, you know what, this is all part of the plan. You know, whatever your belief is, if it's a religious thing or whatever it is, like everything happens for a reason. There's a reason this is going on. This will pass. Like, let's just get through it and get it done and make the most of it because it's all part of the journey and the story, you know?
Absolutely.
So that's really worked for me in the past.
God, I really want to get on to now talking about Heaps Normal because that would be such a beautiful segue. But, and let's do that because that very much to me, when you told me the story of Heaps Normal, and we'll get into it in a second, is so much using your life and using things that have happened to you to create something pretty magical. And then I was looking at Instagram today, and is it 2 years old?
Yeah, today. We turned two, or yesterday, 2 years old.
High five. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's been a journey, you know. It was, for me.
Sounds like it. And I reckon as we're, like, talking about it, you've actually bought some in.
I have.
So why don't we
Let's crack them open. Yeah, breakfast yeah. beers. It's 9 o'clock in the morning.
We've got to get like the right, like let's see if we can get this. You go first.
Oh, that's sounding good.
All right, let's see. The nails are in the way. God, I have so many questions, but basically, so Heaps Normal is this really beautiful, independent, non-alcoholic beer product, like brand that you've created. I'm really interested in the idea and I guess how it originated.
Yeah, for sure.
Where did this idea come from?
Cool. So yeah, about 3 years into running a branding studio, like I said, we were still trying to finesse our process and figure things out. And we had a particularly difficult client that, you know, in hindsight was on us for not having a real watertight process of building a brand. So, you know, it was tricky and it put a lot of imposter syndrome into me. I was just wondering, you know, should we be doing this? Are we good at building brands? And we built some really good brands I'm super proud of. But imposter syndrome just kind of started sinking in, as it inevitably does with a lot of people. So I had this kind of feeling like, you know, can we make a brand of our own that's not dependent on a client telling us what to do? You know, I feel like we know how to build a brand. And I just wanted to put that hypothesis to the test, you know? So, and then kind of went, okay, what if we're going to build our own brand, what would it be? And for me, I guess growing up with alcoholism in the family, you know, what happened with my dad, I've never had a good relationship with alcohol growing up. Like I was that guy in my 20s who, you know, it was the life of the party, going out at night and had so much fun, and then wake up in the morning with a bit of a blurry head and how did I get home?
What do they call it? Sunday scaries. Is that?
Yeah, that thing. We used to call it the fear, you know, fuck, what happened last night? What did I do? You know, and it's, you know.
And there's phones now.
Totally, right?
Like back then.
Yeah.
We didn't have like, proof.
and you can like, you know, you joke about it now, but when you're in the midst of that and you're like, oh my God, like, you know, like what actually, how did I actually get home? And for the most part, it was fine. You know, like I'd phone my friends the next day, and this was growing up in London and as a young 20-year-old, you know, for the most part, it was fine. But every now and again, you know, I'd phone my friends from the night before and it was normally like, yeah, it was fun. But sometimes I was like, man, you were out of control. You know, like you offended somebody or you tried to pick a fight with a bouncer who's like 9 times the size of you. And I'm like, what? Like, can't believe it. So I would consider myself like a problem drinker. You know, like I would go out and I would, most of the time I'd be okay, but sometimes I'd cross the line and I wouldn't have an off button, and then I just make a fool of myself. And then I started like not going out and being super reclusive and missing out on opportunities.
Because, really?
Yeah, because I just didn't want to put myself in that situation.
That's so I don't have that relationship with alcohol. It's just something where I think because I'm such a lightweight, like I can't really drink, but I know so many friends of mine that like for me, I just go, but why can't just have two? And they're just like, it doesn't happen. They can't. Yeah. It's just... You know, and that I guess that's such a universal problem for many people.
For sure. And you know, I've done a lot of work on myself the last few years. Like I've been seeing therapists and kinesiologists and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, looking back, surprise, surprise, comes down to daddy issues, right? Like I mean, like I should have known.
I
love that
I asked you, so where did the idea come from? And we've gone like, woo.
Well, I'm building up to that answer, right? So yeah, for me, it was like, well, you know, I want to do a non-alcoholic beer company because I was basically scratching an itch. Like if I would either go out and, you know, drink a Coca-Cola and tell everyone I had a fake ear infection and it was on antibiotics, which is why I wasn't drinking, or I wouldn't go out, or I go out and, you know, have a glass of wine that could very easily lead into a bottle of wine and then, you know, whatever happened afterwards. So for me, the challenge of building our own brand was like, all right, it needs to be a non-alcoholic beer.
But can I just ask, do you remember the moment you had the idea? Like, or was it an idea that kind of hung around for a while?
Yeah.
Like, tell me about that.
It festered for a long time. Like it went through like, you know, at the time, like Seedlip was becoming really well known, you know, a non-alcoholic gin in the UK, and was kind of watching that. Obviously didn't really want to do a gin and challenge that space, but like, you know, I had some friends as well that I'd spoken to that, you know, were on similar journeys and, you know, just didn't want to go out and drink and, you know, fall victim to whatever would happen because of their doing. And then...
So you don't remember the actual moment that you thought of it? It kind of...
I do.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, I went to Japan for work. We did some work with SoftBank and Hakuhodo and did a big pitch to Masayoshi-san.
You have to say it in a... Masayoshi-san.
Yeah, I know. Masayoshi-san. He wore a dressing gown in the pitch and slippers. Oh. Yeah. It was wild.
Wow.
There was like 400 people. Everyone's like got headphones on and microphones and translating from English to Japanese. It was crazy.
Wow.
And I remember going out for dinner and like the obligatory, you know, drinking sake and beer and wine and everything, and then just being like, oh, I'm not enjoying this anymore. And then noticing that a lot of the youth around there were not drinking as well. You know, the old school Japanese, it's pretty well known. Like they have capsule hotels there. Like people just work for hours and they get drunk and then they just jump into a capsule hotel for a few hours and go back to work. It's crazy.
And then die.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it's horrible.
But the youth are being kind of a lot more aware of that. And then so a really good friend of mine lives in the States. So I went over to LA and noticed the same thing, you know, like youth are microdosing on LSD or marijuana, whatever it is, and drinking kombucha when they go out at night. They're not drinking alcohol, you know, and I think – it was just really obvious to me. I think as an island over here in Australia, we get like a 12-month head start on trends sometimes. So I think it's really good to travel and see those things, how they happen in quote unquote more first world countries, if you like, or whatever you want to call those
things.
We're
a bit behind.
I think we are, yeah.
I think so too.
Yeah, particularly from a product and creativity point of view. And I think spending some time in Europe and the UK and the US, you start noticing, if you're aware of them, you start noticing things that are starting to happen, some trends and movements. Not all of them kind of materialize and fulfill themselves, but sometimes they do. And I've got a lot of friends who've done things that way. You know, they've gone and traveled and picked up an idea from somewhere else and brought it home and made a really successful business out of it. So to get back to your question, I think, you know, the seed was there. I know how to build a brand. I don't know how to brew beer. I don't know how to build a company like that as well. So, you know, I started looking for people to help me kind of bring this to life. And it was very much a side hustle. You know, I was still running the branding studio. I still am running the branding studio. But I went and knocked on the doors of three breweries in Sydney that are pretty well known, like friends of friends, made intros and, you know, pitched this whole idea of a non-alc beer and was very politely walked out the boardroom. You know, this is never going to work. It's not really for us. Like, I think you're wasting your time. It's not really going to go anywhere.
And did you, like at that stage, was it just a concept or had you actually mocked up?
Yeah, kind of mocked up cans and design things. It wasn't Heaps Normal. It was called Quiet Beer at the time. That was kind of the working title name at first, which is actually why our first SKU is called the Quiet XBA. It's a bit of an ode to the original business name. But yeah, so yeah, pitched this idea to three breweries, hoping one of them would take me under their wing and go, yeah, we'll help you brew it and you can pay us what you sell or something like that. But nobody was interested. And I just couldn't let it go. I was like a dog with a bone. I just couldn't put it down and couldn't stop thinking about it. And it kept me awake at night. And, you know, from like trying to prove a point, like I know there's something in this. But also, like I said earlier, like scratching my own itch, like I wanted to go out and drink non-alcoholic beer, but I couldn't find one that tasted good, you know? So just kept knocking on doors. And eventually, a few months before, we'd done some work with Young Henry's from through the branding studio and got to know Andy Miller, who was the head of marketing there. And he'd since left and was consulting and working for some other companies and hit him up. He was like the fourth person I kind of tapped up and we met in a pub in Piedmont and sat down over a beer, ironically, and I kind of pitched it to him. And he was the first person that went, I get it. I know exactly what you want to do. And I love this. It's so exciting. Wow. And just fully got behind it. Yeah.
I feel like most people, you know, everyone says like, oh, everyone's got a book in them. I feel like everyone has like an idea or a business idea or a product idea. And well, I guess the question is like, when do you keep pushing and when do you let it go? And one of the things that I always say to people is, It's the ones that don't leave you. And it's like interesting before you were like, it was festering. Like there was this, it's almost like the idea exists outside of you and it's chosen you to, I mean, this is a bit of a spiritual kind
Love
of
it.
Way to look at it, but it's almost chosen you as the vessel to birth itself. And it's like this, there's something so strong because some ideas are just like, you have it and you're like, oh yeah. And then you forget about it and you let it go. And then there are other things where it's just like, for some reason, it's like, you just can't let it go.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
And there's something so interesting about knowing when do you keep pushing. And it sounds like this idea just had its hold on you. It was almost like the idea was pulling you.
Well, I mean, the thing for me, and this is my first rodeo, like I had a t-shirt company when I was younger as well called Vintage Industries. My brother and I did a 3D photo app that we made called ViewPop. And, you know, had limited success with both of those things. You know, like the t-shirt company, we're in about 30 stores around the UK and South Africa at one point. Never really made a ton of money off it or really fulfilled any kind of massive purpose. It was just we really were into vintage t-shirts and wanted to recreate them. And then, you know, with ViewPop, we spent a lot of money in trying to build this business, and it was an app on your phone that would let you capture a three-dimensional photo in kind of like 2 seconds. And we went to Web Summit in Dublin, and we made the finals of Uber Pitch, and you know, with Mark Burris, and we did all these cool things, but we never monetized it. It was kind of like this thing where it's like, you know, we got some investment, but you know, there was no real purpose. There was no vision for it. It was just a thing that we thought was cool, you know. With Heaps Normal, for me, it was more around like, I know there's a problem out there. I know I'm not the only person who doesn't have a healthy relationship with alcohol. And I guess like having been through that myself with alcoholism in the family, it was like, you know what, if we can pull this off and we can help one other family from having an alcoholic in the family, it's worth it for me. And wow. And that for me was kind of the reason to get out of bed every morning. And you know, the reason when it's midnight and you're looking through one eye at the computer to finish your presentation and you really want to go to bed, but you know you can just push through for another hour and get it done. It's that, you know, like, and it's really crazy because now that we're a real business, we get messages daily from people, like legitimately, like every 2 or 3 days, there's someone sends us either a LinkedIn message or a DM on Instagram going, man, like, you know, my husband was like, so stressed at work, and he used to go to the pub and get drunk and come home and be a dick. And now he drinks Heaps Normal and he's like the loveliest dude ever. And we've just, it's healed our marriage. You're like, what? Like, fuck. It's just a non-out beer. You know?
Yeah. Marriages all totally. Over Australia. Yeah. That could be your tagline.
100%. You know, and parents saying, you know, people messaging and saying, you know, their parents were big drinkers and now they've discovered Heaps Normal and on the non-out train and all this kind of stuff. So for me, that's the purpose, you know, like it makes it worthwhile.
So I guess that's for anyone listening that has a big idea. Maybe that's something to think about. Is there a strong purpose behind it? Would you wake up every morning to pursue this idea? Or is it just like a cool thing that you want to make a buck from?
Totally. And I think that's a lot of the fault. I think, you know, a purpose can never be financially driven. And I think for my first two businesses that I started, and it's funny because you say like, oh, I started these two businesses. It's like you just go and register a name of a company and then you can call yourself like a CEO and then you're like a business owner. Like, but you know, there wasn't purpose. There was just like, this will be cool. You know, like I think my friends will dig this and it'll be really cool. And that's not like a reason to do what you do. You know, it's got to be deeper than that. So it took a while to find that, you know.
That's such a beautiful insight. And I think so many people listening will kind of, I guess, check themselves and think, you know, put that through your own filter. Like, sure. Is there a strong purpose? I know for me personally, everything I do, whether it's the Ideas Bodega, whether it's Creative Mornings, this podcast, everything is about, I guess, helping people be self-expressed and more creative and then helping people see that creativity is something that's like for everyone and tangible. And it's not this weird elusive thing that's reserved for a chosen few people. And, you know, that's what really drives me to keep doing, you know, what I do as well. And I think it's like when you get to that, it's exciting. And the thing is, it doesn't box you in. It does the opposite. It allows you to do all these other things. And I mean, for me, when I took on Creative Mornings, I kind of freaked out because, you know, we're talking before, like I'm not the most organized person. Like I think I'm a bit ADD and, you know, putting on an event for 100, 200 people every month was completely like freaked out.
I can imagine.
But the why, the purpose at the core of it, what Creative Mornings makes possible for people was so aligned that I was like, I can just figure the other stuff out.
For sure.
And I just had to kind of like walk through that fire of just not knowing how to do it. But I guess like when you have that such a strong sense of why, it's amazing what you can achieve. I want to go back to something you were talking about before, which was the Heaps Normal journey. And you got to the point where Andy comes into the picture. So can you pick it up there and just tell me a little bit more about what happened from, you know, meeting Andy? I feel like if it was a book, there would be a chapter that says meeting Andy.
Oh, he'd love that. I mean, Andy and I crossing paths with this is probably the kind of defining moment, really. You know, I don't think I would have let it go, but I was constantly getting no's, not interested. And him being the first one to kind of go, okay, like I can see what you're trying to do here, kind of back it. And he's had an interesting one. He's done some funny stuff as well. Like he traveled in his pajamas for I don't know how long, like for months, like around China and stuff. Like,
why?
You should get him in and interview him because he's just a nutter. But yeah, meeting him and kind of getting his, I guess, belief in this was a huge moment for me. You know, we then kind of realized, okay, well, there's the two of us. We need someone to make the beer because neither of us are brewers. So we're like, shit, how do we get that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it all. We've got the marketing person and we've got the designer. Oh, what about the actual product?
Exactly. So we reached out to Benny Holdstock, who's another co-founder and, you know, a dear friend as well. And yeah, I mean, Benny's an amazing brewer. He's brewed for Young Henry's. He's brewed for Grifter. Four Pines, he's done some work at Lion on Little Creatures. He's done all sorts of stuff. So pulling him in and going, hey, like we've got this idea. What do you think? And he was just like, well, okay, like this is going to be a challenge. Like, but interested because.
So you basically went to him and he was a friend?
Yeah, he was a friend. Him and Andy had worked together at Young Henry's and I just met him. And
we need you to make a beer.
We need you to make a
beer.
With
no alcohol in it.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a challenge. So the three of us came together. I'd also grown up surfing competitively in South Africa. So I know Geordie Smith. We've been friends since he's a few years younger than me, but since I was about 11 or 12. And we've made teams and gone to nationals together and all that kind of stuff. So I know him pretty well. So I hit him up and was just like, hey, I know he was off the booze because he'd been runner up to being world champion surfer twice. So he was looking for that competitive edge. And I knew.
So does he live in South Africa still or he's also...
He's all over the place. He travels on the world tour every year. So he's got a house in Hawaii, Cape Town, Durban, California. They travel a lot, you know, as part of what they do. Fair to say he's probably based in Cape Town.
So you were like, my grommet friend, he's the fourth person to make this.
Exactly.
Thing.
Well, we wanted someone who, you know, could shine some light on it. He's pretty connected. You know, he put in the first bit of money, allowed us to, you know, take what we were doing essentially in Benny's kitchen as a homebrew setup and do it on more of a commercial level, which needed some funding to do that. So Geordie put some money in pretty early on and came on as a co-founder. And yeah, the four of us kind of went to town and, you know, we'd done enough homebrews to realize there was a way to do this.
Were the four of you, I'm so like into bringing the story to life, like were the four of you like sitting in the same room? Like
the three of us were, Geordie wasn't. Okay. He comes to Australia normally once a year for the tour. And so he's here for a couple of months. So we always make sure we get together when he's here, but he was remote for a lot of those early kind of meetings. But
so paint that picture the first time the three of you are in a room.
Yeah. Well, we met at a pub in Piedmont and kind of got the idea down and kind of got buy-in from all three of us that we wanted to do this together. And then, yeah, we kind of went to town. Like Andy and I are working through the brand stuff and, you know, Andy's comes from a really incredible marketing background and, you know, just really looks at things from very interesting angles and comes up with solutions to problems, which is, I just love the way that guy thinks, you know, it's really interesting. And Benny, you know, just being an amazing brewer, you know, we sat there and realized what we wanted to make and how challenging it was. Non-alc beer has been around since the 60s, you know, it's nothing new.
Oh.
Yeah. The problem with it, in my opinion, is it's, you know, there's typically been two ways to make non-alc beer. One's reverse distillation, reverse osmosis, and the other was filtering the beer off at the end. So the problem is it takes all the alcohol out. So it's a normal brewing process. You extract the alcohol out at the end. The problem is that pulls all the flavors out of the beer too. So a lot of the older non-alc beers are watery, a little bit tasteless. They give everything else a bad rep because it's like this is fizzy water. It's not real beer. What Benny did and what we did was we used a very particular yeast that micro ferments to just under 0.5% alcohol. Anything under 0.5 is classified as non-alcoholic. So orange juice that's been in the fridge for a week will have up to 0.5% alcohol. A ripe banana, a loaf of bread that's been sitting on a shelf for a few days.
Wow.
Yeah, like so. I mean, kombucha has got up to 0.5% alcohol, you know. So we used this new yeast and we didn't have to take any alcohol at the end because it micro-fermented to, I think it was 0.378%, which is, you know, well under the 0.5%, and that allowed us to have a non-alcoholic beer. So
can I ask a question?
Of course.
That yeast, is that new? So
yeah.
New, like where did that come from, the new yeast?
That's our Colonel Sanders secret recipe. I'd have to kill you if I told you about that, Nick.
Okay. Was that Benny. Yeah. Was that something that Benny created himself?
Yeah, like he'd really kind of gone deep on the research and explored the category and looked at a lot of historical data on how these have been built, and then just tinkered in his kitchen, you know, just kept doing like brew after brew after brew until it tasted to a point where he thought this is good enough to kind of scale.
Mm-hmm.
And then we found a contract brewer in Victoria who's our brew partner, and we basically went from, you know, from these little kind of sealable bottles in Benny's kitchen to doing, you know, like 2,000 cans.
Wow.
And they weren't printed. We couldn't afford to print on the cans at the time. So they're plain silver cans. We made 1,200 of them. We got them up in my kitchen, and my wife, my daughter and I put these stickers on them that just said Heaps Normal. It's just our logo.
Oh, so at that point you had Heaps Normal.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'd refined the brand to a point where it was good enough to go.
So it was Quiet Beer?
Quiet Beer, yeah. That's what we first called it.
Can I just dive in there for a second? Because it's really interesting to me. So can you talk about the beer being called Quiet Beer and then Heaps Normal? Talk me through the naming process.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, Quiet Beer was kind of the working title, and we designed, I think, like 7 or 8 iterations of the brand at that point. And we're still trying to figure out the product. Like, we still have Benny brewing away in the kitchen, which allowed us to kind of tinker away with the brand. And
so that was all happening.
Yeah, like, it was all happening concurrently. Yeah.
Concurrently. That's, yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, okay. Benny's off in his kitchen, kind of like the mad scientist, you know, putting together all these concoctions and trying to get it to taste pretty good. And Andy and I were kind of really focused on the brand and building out what the messaging would look like and that kind of stuff. So, and we were pretty much ready to go. Like, Quiet Beer was what it was going to be called. And then one night Andy just kind of messaged us and goes, I can't stop thinking about like the brand name not being right. And we're like, what do you mean? And he just said, no, I don't think we've nailed it yet. And we were like, kind of caught us a little bit off guard.
Because you thought you were, you
I
had
thought we
it.
Were
you
into it.
In
yeah.
You were really into it.
Yeah. I mean, we registered a company. It was called Quiet Drinks. Like, that was it. Like, we were off to the races, you know. We'd registered the business. They had a business name and an ABN and all that kind of stuff.
Wow. But he just had some.
Yeah, there's something that was just telling him, like, this is not the right name. And then so we kind of went, okay, well, let's kind of brainstorm what we could do and what we could call it. And, Andy was the one who came up with Heaps Normal. He was just like, let's make it Heaps Normal to just drink non-alc beer, because it's not, you know, at the time. I mean, even now it's still massively misunderstood. But, you know, back then, I mean, we would tell people about non-alc beer, and the first thing would be like, why would you do that? No one's going to drink non-alc beer. Like, it's crazy, you know?
Mm, it's not the norm.
Yeah, it's not the norm, you know? And so there we go.
Hang on. I think I just had a brain.
The penny just dropped.
I was going to say brain fart, penny drop, minor epiphany. Is that why the character's called, the brain is called Norm?
Yeah, that's Norm, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
We've got some work to do on telling our story if you don't know that yet.
Well, so for anyone... Sorry, I love it when that happens. For anyone who hasn't actually tried this beer, firstly, it tastes really good. And friends listening know that I don't actually drink beer, but I like this. And it's got this little cute walking character. It's a brain on legs. What's it holding?
It's holding a paintbrush, which symbolizes creativity, and he's holding a can, which symbolizes our beer.
That's beautiful. So it's kind of like the, wow, okay, that's really cool. And the character is called Norm. And I knew that, but I didn't know why. And it actually reminded me, like, you probably don't know this, but growing up in the 80s, 90s, but I think it's 80s in Australia, there was this, I'm pretty sure there was this campaign called Fit for Life. And there was this, like, I think it was about like, be fit, be healthy, go for a walk. And I don't know, I feel like there was this jingle that went along with it. I'll Google it later and send it to you.
Yeah, I mean that's how we came together. You know, and again back to brand strategy, we sat down and we're, you know, what's our mission and our vision and our purpose, and our mission is to change drinking culture. You know, I think it's a weird one, because I think a lot of the reason of it being received so well as a brand is because we're not preachy. We don't say alcohol's a devil, don't drink.
Yes.
We just go, hey, if you're driving tonight and you're designated driver or you're sober for life, here's an option, you know, yes. And you're welcome to try it.
Yeah. So I just want to like go back to the name thing, because I'm just fixated on that for a second. So Andy has said, like, the name doesn't feel right to me. How about Heaps Normal? So he came up with it on his own.
Yeah, I mean, we were all throwing in options here and there. And then I think that was the one that stuck. Well, clearly the one that stuck.
And did he then email it or call you, or how did he tell you?
Yeah, WhatsApp group chat. Yeah.
And he was like, how about Heaps Normal?
Yeah.
Okay, take yourself to that moment.
Yeah.
What was your reaction when you saw it? Was it like a hell yes, or was it?
It was one of those like stopped in your tracks, because we'd had so many kind of going backwards and forwards, you know, like this. I can't even remember half of them, but Heapstorm was one that kind of made me go, okay, hang on a minute, there's maybe something in this. And we kind of thought about it and built on it and, you know, and then coined, like, what does that stand for? You know, it's let's normalize mindful drinking, because, you know, drinking culture is broken, you know, people drinking shoeies and passing yes. out and stuff.
So yeah, the four of you guys kind of came on board, and you've got the products, and now you've decided on the name, and it's Heaps Normal, which I love. And we've got Norm, the brain character. How did you then kind of shop it around? Like, how did you get people interested? What was that process then of kind of getting people on board and getting other people to believe in the idea that you knew was right?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I mean, we locked in the name, we'd kind of created the brand a little bit, and we made a bunch of stickers, as you do. And we printed, our first run of cans were plain silver cans, because we didn't have the money to print on the cans. It's quite expensive, and there's really high MOQs. I think it's like 60,000 units. And we're like, that was just terrifying. So we put stickers on cans. My daughter and my wife helped me do it in our dining room, and we put them into brown paper bags, and we put stickers on them. And we had this list of chefs, restaurateurs, publicans, bar owners, all around Sydney that we kind of knew, friends of friends, like, you know, some like dream target lists like Merivale and all these sorts of different people that we just wanted them to taste and see what they say, see what they think, you know. So, and we just really hustled, you know, we like got on the phone and we got an email and we just said we'd come drop off some samples, and, you know, everyone said yes. And we did, and we dropped off these blank silver cans with a sticker, and then we got like, you know, the head chef or the sommelier at some fancy restaurant to try it. And then we said, what do you think? And he went, yeah, it's a great craft beer. And it's like, you know, started naming all the flavor profiles. And then we said, what ABV do you think it is? Like, what's the alcohol volume? So, you know, normal beer is around 5%, somewhere around there. So we'd ask that question, and, you know, the chefs were going, oh, it's about a 4.5%. And then we said it's non-alcoholic, and kind of jaws just hit the floor. They were like, what? Like, this tastes like a normal beer. And we're like,
so did you see any of those moments? Because you said you sent it to them.
Yeah, we did. Some of them we saw, we did it kind of there and then in the flesh. And some of it we kind of waited to hear back from them. And then we'd hear back.
And what's one where you were there and tell me, bring to life the reaction?
We had a really interesting one. Benny went to go see a publican in Melbourne. And he kind of walked in and, you know, told him the whole pitch and the story, and didn't say it was non-alcoholic. And, the guy kind of cracked a nice ice cold sample, can, and drank it and took a sip and went, oh, delicious. And, you know, really good. And, you know, really good, easy on the palate and tasteful and blah, blah, blah. And, all. And then while he was having his second sip, Benny said, oh, it's non-alcoholic. And the guy spat it out on the floor and told Benny to get out. Wild, because there's just this threatened. Old school mentality about like, that's not a real beer, you know, it's got no alcohol in it. And it's really interesting to see people's reactions to non-alcohol beer. Like I always say this, I'm sure you would have heard me say it, but there's three types of people I feel like I come across. There's people that go, I love Heaps Normal, love what you do, follow you on Instagram, huge fan, always lovely and flattering to hear that, feels good. There's then the second type of person that goes, this is never going to work. Like, non-alcohol beer is ridiculous. Not even a real beer. You're wasting your time. This is never going to make any money. Like, give up now, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that's fine. Like, everyone has haters. And I think if you have someone that hates what you do, that's an absolute blessing, because it means there's going to be other people that absolutely love what you do. And I think that's down to a brand having a point of view, having an opinion, being kind of outspoken about it, but going, this is what we stand for. This is who we are. And then as a consumer, you can make the decision to either go, you know what? Not for me. That's cool. They're never going to buy your product or service. Or the consumer goes, I really identify with that. That's pretty cool. And there's a chance that person's going to become a brand advocate and a fan of your brand, right?
So have an opinion, have a point of view.
Yeah, have a point of view, and not everyone's going to like it. And that's fine. That's great. You don't want everyone to like it.
Do you think that also having haters kind of drives you?
Yeah, it does. You know, we still get weird comments on like YouTube videos and stuff. And you're just like, what? Like, but it's fine. Like, it's, you know, like, I don't think any brand can be everything to everybody. I think that's a lot of the trouble of building brands, is people want to sell their thing to everyone. And it's like, not everyone's going to buy it. Like, do you remember the Wolf of Wall Street movie where at the end, the real Jordan Belfort kind of at the credits, he's like trying to teach some young sales guy how to sell him a pen. And he goes, sell me this pen. And the guy goes like, oh, this is the best pen. And he goes, nope. Next, he goes, sell me this pen. And then the other guy goes, oh, this is a really fancy pen. It's, you know, you could sign a big deal with this pen. And he goes, no. And then eventually the guy who's told to sell the pen goes, are you in the market for a pen? And he goes, no. He goes, okay, well then I can't sell it to you. It's that. It's actually making sure someone that you want to be a customer wants to be a customer. They're right to be a customer. If they're not, you could sell till the cows come home and they're not going to buy it, you know? So I think it's that. And it's, you know, back to what I was saying a minute ago, the third type of person is the person who goes, I see what you guys are doing. I've seen the kind of non-alcoholic movement happening. I'm not really sure I understand it. And I always go, well, instead of going out and having 8 beers and probably losing your phone and missing work tomorrow, you could have 4 normal beers and 4 heaps normal beers and everything will be okay. And the light bulb goes off and they buy a 4-pack. And then within a week, we're getting a DM going, man, I had 6 of your beers last night at a house party and I went for a surf the next morning and I was the first person in the water.
What do you start on? I'm just like, I'm trying to imagine, like, trying to get my friends who drink way too much. Some of them, if you're listening, you know who you are. Sorry, that sounds really judgy.
No, not at all.
But just like, do they start with the, yeah, but they judge me because like I'm the weird one that's there with like soda water. Do you start with heaps normal or is it like, I mean, there's probably no right or wrong, but I'm just curious. Yeah. Do you reckon people start with like the alcoholic beer and then go to the heaps normal or do they go
the other way around?
Yeah. Like, what is it?
It's weird.
What do you reckon?
I think everyone's different. You know, we get people who have like 3 beers, normal beers, and then start getting a little bit of a buzz and then move on to the heaps normal. And then we've got like Ross who works for us, an absolute legend. You know, he'll go out and like start with the heaps normal and then he'll have a beer, then he'll have a heaps normal and just kind of mix it one for one.
Oh, okay.
You know? Which kind of works, you know, and then there's other people that are just like, I gave up alcohol 18 months ago. I haven't had a drink since. So this is all I drink when I go out.
Congratulations.
You know? Thanks. Yeah, not very good at being drunk. So started a non-alcoholic beer company. But yeah, it's been good. And I think, you know, we're still so early on in what we're doing here, you know, but people are really resonating with it. And it's so cool just to get messages from people who kind of understand it and getting behind what we're doing.
What about the timing? Do you feel like the timing was right? And
yeah,
tell
massively.
Me about that.
Yeah, massively. Look, I think we kicked this thing off just as COVID was starting. Like I remember we were about to go into kegs. We're going to try and figure out how to get our beers into kegs, which is really hard because with the lack of alcohol, the chance of infection in the product is so much higher. So non-alc beer in kegs is really tricky because people can get properly sick from it, you know, if there's infections in there. So we were kind of exploring that. And then like the COVID thing started kicking off like early 2020. We were like, oh my God, like this is what is going on here. Like the rest of the world was thinking. But I think it really worked in our favor. We kind of quickly pivoted going back into cans and staying away from the keg thing, and restaurants shut down all around the world. And, you know, I think the first lockdown people went to the bottle shop and stocked up and, you know, hibernated and drank through it. And the second lockdown people went, we can't do that again. Like that was wild. We were drunk for the last few months and we were just there. So I think our timing worked really, really well in that instance. And I think just, you know, parking the whole COVID thing for a while, like I think just the wellness kind of category is exploding at the moment. People are just becoming a lot more conscious of what they put in their body, what they consume, you know, how well they're sleeping, what level, you know, what quality of food and drink are they putting into their bodies and all that kind of stuff. So there was this kind of like weird, I don't want to say perfect storm, but the sum of all parts where everything just came together at once. Startmate, COVID, the wellness thing, like our own positions, like personally, you know, there could have been something with one of us where we didn't have the time to do this, you know, and it wouldn't have worked. So like everything just came together perfectly. But I think it comes down to what we were talking about earlier is just starting, you know, just taking a swing, you know, like I think there's so many things when you look back at a success story to go like, oh, all those things lined up. But like if you didn't take the first step, nothing would have lined up.
So Pete, what about your creativity? Because you're now in the throes of running 2 businesses, like the side hustle became like probably bigger than the business, 3 kids. You're a creative. Where are you? Or are you still being creative? in your life in other ways? Are you feeling creatively fulfilled? What do you do to kind of make sure you're still the creative that you are?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge part of not wanting to let go of electric and analog was that Heaps Normal is like, I feel like my life's work in so many ways, but not being able to create brands and really kind of do that on a regular basis was just felt pretty daunting to me. So yeah, that's why I continue to do ENA.
And what about specifically for creativity? Who inspires you, or where do you look for creative inspiration?
I've got a whole list of, you know, creative resources and stuff like Brand New and, you know, a bunch of different websites that I will trawl through, like Behance and all sorts of stuff that everyone knows about, I'm sure, that listens to your stuff. Anyway, you know, my kids, I think we're all born creative, and I think we're taught as we grow older to be less creative. And I think if you look through the lens of a child that hasn't had that conditioning yet or that support, like my kids draw stuff and I'm just like, what? Like, that's amazing. Like, I'll never be able to do that, you know? And like getting that inspiration of, you know, like we talk about our forever home. That's the thing in our family. Like, one day we're going to have the forever home. So my kids are drawing the forever home with like skate parks in the garden and like all
that's the
like,
concrete.
Yeah, fully. Like
the concrete floor that's like, going to skate through the
like,
house.
Imagine like a shopping mall car park, like skate park. They're like, that's going to be in our forever home according to them, you know? So just having, you know, being around that naivety that hasn't been conditioned, that is just super creative.
So they help you be creative?
Hugely. And I think, you know, when we get older, you know, like I've had school teachers have gone like, oh, stop doing that and focus on this. And it's like, if that's the thing you like doing, do that, do more of that, you know? We don't need like another mathematician. I haven't used trigonometry since school, do you know what I mean? But we're not told like how to manage our finances or change a car tire. All the important things you need to do, but we're taught about like, you know, geography and history of wars that happened hundreds of years ago, which I guess there's lessons in, but yeah, it's not really something I'm that interested in.
I was wondering if you have a challenge that you could put out there to the listeners. So a lot of people go through creative ruts, or they go through times where it's just not flowing. What's a challenge that you could put out there to the listeners? Ooh. A creative challenge, like something that they could do that could, you know, inspire, awaken, ignite their creativity.
Well, let's do what we were talking about earlier, purpose. Like everyone out there needs to find their purpose. And there's a few ways to do that.
Okay. I like this.
Yeah, this is cool. This is a great question. You're ending on a banger. Well done. So I think, yeah, really digging deep on why you do what you do. So whatever you do, why do you do it? I think everyone should be able to answer that question. And there's ways to figure that out. Like I feel like I've spent a lot of time and money over the years in education. Like I'm always trying to teach myself things and learning and joining these groups and masterminds and workshops and things like that. And, you know, sometimes to, you know, reverse engineer them and figure out what works and what I can take. And sometimes just to, cause I'm, you know, really intrigued about how this could add value. So I get a lot of value from people like Chris Doe at The Future, heaps of stuff there on their website. So thefuturewithoutane.com, Donald Miller, from Business Made Simple or Story Brand. He's amazing. And there's a lot of kind of courses that you can do that are online, particularly from those two people that are really cost-effective, like $100 cost-effective, where you can go and do this video course and figure out why you do what you do and really kind of understand your reason for wanting to get out of bed every morning to do the things that you do. And I think that's the challenge I'd like to put out there. Like, and then let me know, like tell me, message me and tell me, hey, I did this challenge and figured out this is why I do what I do.
Wow. Like I figured out my why.
Exactly.
And then reach out to Pete and then
do it.
Yeah. That's and then tell him like what epic thing you create because of it. I think that's such a poignant thing and it's such a nice way to end. So three questions that I ask everyone at the end, rapid fire. So why is creativity important in individuals?
Because I think we're born creative and I think creativity pushes us forward as individuals. And I think for some reason we're kind of trained as we get older at school to not be creative, you know, to tone down those creative urges and focus more on the quote unquote more important things, you know, like maths and all that kind of stuff that's not creative. And I think, you know, with anything, like if we're not if we're not creative, we're not moving forward, not innovating, we're not changing. And I think that's a real easy way to become stale and bored and just become boring.
Cool. All right. I agree. And why is creativity important in workplaces?
I mean, same reason, you know. I just think without being creative, we're not going to progress. We're not going to move forward. It's so true. Like, you know, creative thinking and thinking outside the box. I'll give you a really good example, right? So for me, creativity is about thinking differently. So my grandfather, his name was Raymond Prattley. He used to own a company in Coventry in England called Midland Diamond Tooling, MDT, and he would make tools to cut diamonds. And back then, the only thing that could cut a diamond is a diamond. So he would make these tools that were worth a lot of money because they had diamond tips on the end of them. And he had this warehouse out in Coventry, and he had a bunch of, you know, workers, laborers that worked in this factory making these things. And the one day, one of his foremen, you know, managers came in and said, "Hey, Mr. Prattley, we know that some tools are getting stolen out of the warehouse, out of the, you know, the storeroom." So he's like, "Okay, we've got to fix this, obviously, because they're losing a lot of money." And then the foreman said to him, "We know who it is. It's John." And my granny went, "Oh my God, like, John's our best machinist. Like, money couldn't buy someone to do the job that he does. Like, his role is so important to this company. Like, if he was to leave, we'd be screwed." So he thought about it long and hard and eventually called John in and said, "Hey, John, got some news for you. I'm going to give you a promotion." And John was like, "What do you mean?" And he goes, "Well, you've been working really hard. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a promotion. Part of your new job is to be making sure that nothing goes missing out of the storeroom.
Wow.
And he managed to figure out this guy. John broke down in tears, basically came clean and said, "It's been me." And he said, "Why are you doing that?" And he goes, "Because my little boy is really sick and we need money to take him to the doctors and we don't have the money." So just having this conversation and knowing, you know, to think creatively, think differently, look at things from a different perspective, allowed him to, one, uncover the truth of the problem, two, not lose his most gifted laborer, and three, solve a real problem for the guy. Because now all of a sudden this guy's getting more money, he can look after his son, and guess what? The theft has stopped as well. So, you know,
wow.
It's crazy, right?
It's crazy.
Like, my initial reaction would be like, right, let's just fire this person because they're stealing from us. But he was a good dude. It was out of character. He was so good at what he did. They needed him in the company. So thinking creatively just makes such a difference, right?
Yeah, that wasn't rapid fire, but that was worth telling that story. Thank you so much. And then the very last one is, why is creativity important in the world?
You know, for me, creativity is, like I said earlier, it's just about thinking differently. It's about thinking outside the box, trying to achieve the unachievable, trying to do the impossible. And without that creative approach in the world, I think it would be a really boring place to live.
Pete, that has taken us to the end. Wow, this has been really epic.
Cool.
I want to thank you so much for, wow, just the inspiration, for being so open and so honest and sharing your stories with me and the listeners. I'm so inspired and just, wow, just can't thank you enough. And for people listening who are going to go and find out their purpose and then create epic things, and they're going to get in touch with you, how do they find you? Where can they find you?
I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. Just Peter Brennan on LinkedIn. There's like a real like smooth model shot of me like looking away from camera. You know, you can't miss it. And then, yeah, Instagram, Mr. Peter Brennan is my Instagram handle, Electric and Analog and Heaps Normal. I'm on all of those, but LinkedIn, let me know how you go with the challenge.
Yeah.
Let's find our purpose.
Let's do it. Amazing. Thank you so, so much.
Thanks, Nicole.
All right. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning in. To make sure that you never miss an episode, head over to Apple Podcasts and hit subscribe. And while you're there, please leave me a quick rating and review. Until next time.